Chad. We're on to our next podcast. And so we'll start off right off the bat, like we said we were going to do. What kind of caught your eye this week in the National Hockey League?
Well, what caught my eye was what's going on with Montreal. I mean, everybody's saying, oh, Montreal, let's fire the coaches. Let's go on. You don't fire the coaches. The goalies are horseshit. They are. I mean, let's face it. And you know what I think of Price. I mean, I had him in the prospect game, but he's just playing terrible. I mean, Montreal outshoots the Devils. I wrote it down here. 48-34, and they lost 6-4. Outshot the Boston 37-24, and they lose 8-1. Outshot the Rangers 43-34, they lose 6-5. Outshoot the Flyers 42-29, they lose 4-3. I mean,
so what do you do in a situation like that?
People tell them you should bench him.
You bench Price.
Yeah. Get somebody up there that's going to, if you're going to lose, you got to get him mad. He doesn't look like he's mad. He broke his stick. I know he broke his stick. I watched all the games. He broke his stick. Doesn't make any difference. Nothing wrong with the coaching. When you get 44 shots a game.
Yeah. So when you had Cheevers and he was kind of in a slump like this.
I'd bench him a couple of games. Yeah. And not bench him. I mean, you don't bench him. You can't bench Price, but take him out. He's having a tough time. I go back to Patrick Waugh. Remember the time he was getting his brains pounded out? And he left him in there. Sometimes you have to have a mercy pulling. And I remember Hardy Astrom. This is a true story. We're in New York Rangers. We're getting back 6-0. And I said to Kevin Morrison, I said, he was playing defense. I said, he's getting ready to bail. He's looking over here wanting to come out. And I knew, and New Jersey owners were there watching. They're from New Jersey. And I said, he's going to go down with me. And he's looking to bail. I said, Kevin, keep your eye on him because the next whistle, he's going to try to bail out of here. Just keep him in there. And sure enough, he started to come out. Kevin, I pushed him back in the net. I'm the only guy to push my goalie back in the net. No, goalies aren't going good. You can't leave him in there. You got to pull him out there. You got to give him a little mercy pulling sometimes. But there's no problem with the Montreal. When you get 44 shots a game, I don't care who you are. You should be winning some games. You're scoring enough goals. Your goaltending is a problem. That's a problem in Montreal. For instance, in Florida, I mean, they put Chris Drake. Drager, I think that's how you pronounce it. They put him in. He's from Winnipeg, good Winnipeg boy. And he wins the first game. You got a
shutout.
You got a shutout. You put them in. You bring them up from the American Hockey League the way they go. I mean, you just can't keep – if the guy's in a bad situation and he can't stop pucks, once goaltender loses his confidence, as anybody will tell you, they're done.
Yeah. Just a little quick footnote. Like this week in hockey, back in 1979, you're coaching Colorado, and Billy Smith scores the first goal of a goalie.
So yeah, we must have pulled our goalie. What happened is they've got a delayed penalty. And I remember Rob Ramage, God love him, he's a great guy, I really liked him. And he's in behind the net, and I remember he had the puck, a delayed penalty. He passes back to the point where he should have been. So I remember I was on the bench, and I'm looking at – I wasn't looking, but you have an idea it's going in, eh, because just the way it's going. And I'm looking in the eyes of Wilf Paymon. He was on the bench. He says, Wilf, is it going in? He says, I think it is, Grapes. I says, how's it going now? He says, I think it's going in, Grapes. And they scored, and they give Billy Smith the first goal. He didn't really – he made a stop. And it went to Ramage, so that was the first goal.
Yeah, Hextall was the first guy to shoot the puck in the net.
Yeah, I remember Hextall was, I think he wouldn't have done it if he hadn't been up by two goals. He was taking a chance. I remember he caught the puck, sat it down, and put it over top of everybody. But he wouldn't have done that if it hadn't been one goal.
Yeah. But in that game, Colorado came back. We won 7-4. That tied the game up at 4-4, 7-4, and the first star was a good friend of yours, Ron DeLorme, had two goals.
Hey, Ron DeLorme, I could tell you a story, but I remember Ron DeLorme. When Boston Bruins, we had the toughest team. We had the toughest team in sports, never mind hockey. Anyhow, he scores a goal, and he goes down on his knee, and he pulls out an arrow out of his back, And he fires at our bench. We were shocked. Like, did I just see what he just said? I said, the guy says, yeah. I think he fought three guys after that. Wensig, O'Reilly, and Secord. I think anyhow, he was a dandy. In fact, yeah, Ryan DeLorme, now that I think of it, we get talking. I remember at training camp when I first went to Colorado, we had...
Mike Gillis.
Oh, yeah. Mike Gillis was the number one draft choice, and he floated the whole camp. I thought he floated. Soft. And Ronnie DeLorme, he was making no money. And remember, Mike Gillis was, I think he was the number one guy, and he was making the most money, or him and Beck, I think, were tied. Anyhow, I made a decision then. Do I keep Ronnie DeLorme, who was nothing? He was making about 20 grand or 18 grand or something like that, which is a lot of money, but not as a hockey player. I mean, he was nothing. And I said, do I keep him or do I keep the number one draft choice? Well, I had to make a big decision. It really was a big decision because I knew if I kept the number one guy, Mike Gillis, I would be all right, you know, everything. Couldn't say anything. But if I kept Ronnie DeLorme, that means he could go to the owner. And the GM was Ray Miron. I say, see what he's doing? He's sending our number one draft choice down, and he's keeping this kid DeLorme. All right, I knew I was getting fired then, and I did get fired. But Ronnie DeLorme, boy, I think he's the Chiefs out for the Vancouver now. He's a beauty. He's a great kid. You know, I got to talk about a guy I really like for Vancouver is Tanner Pearson. I know people don't talk much about him. They talk about all the other guys. He's from Kitchener. Good guy. Hit 4 points, and Canucks win 5-2 over the Oilers. I tell you, guys like Tanner, that's the guys you win with. When the going gets tough, they're there. Well, Tim, you and I have been watching a guy for a long time. His name is Shane Wright, and I think I'm 15 years old.
Yep, plays for Kingston in the OHL.
Yeah, he was one of those exceptional guys.
Right, so you have to be 16 to be a rookie in the OHL, and he got exceptional status, and he's 15. And the other guys have been, last guy that got that was Connor McDavid.
I tell you, I really like Shane Wright, and the guy's going to be telling me about him. He's got 20 points in 21 games. He's plus three. And Kingston hasn't got too many winning goals this year. It's kind of tough. They got three game winning goals. He's a beaut. Remember the name when I tell you Shane Wright, he's going to be a beauty. You know, I have to talk about Dougie Hamilton. He played for Carolina. He's from Toronto. 27 games. That's pretty good for a defenseman, boy. He doesn't get the PR he should. 27 games. He's got 28 points. He's plus 15. And he's got two game winning goals. Dougie Hamilton. He should get more recognition, and he does on this podcast.
Well, Dad, one of the guests that we had on the Grapevine Show, who I think was one of the funnier guests, and a lot of people back then really wanted to hear from him, was King Clancy.
He didn't think much of my plan, did he? I guess he saw me play. I think I said, I don't understand it, King. I said, back in the 30s, you got $15,000, and I said, and the 60s, when I played, the 70s, I only got $5,000. He says, that's all you were worth.
Yeah.
But anyhow, after his playing days, I remember him after his playing days and everything. He used to be around the gardens all the time. And I remember Harold Ballard. I remember reading the story about Harold Ballard went up to him, and he said, he was like the assistant coach and assistant GM. And he says, what are you doing around here, King? He said, absolutely nothing. He says, keep it up. You're doing a good job.
Yeah, he did everything, King Clancy. He played every position and was a ref.
He was a ref. He was a GM. He was a coach. He was assistant coach. I think he's 65 years. He was everything. He's a Hall of Fame guy. He always seemed to be smiling. I used to see him when I bring the Bruins in there. He always seemed to be smiling, even when we beat them. He's a small guy. Eh? He was only about 5'8". He said he had a million fights. He only won one. Imagine, I mean.
Hey, he said he beat up Eddie Shore.
Yeah, that's hard to believe. I tell you, I won't be lying. He got his name. You know, I often wondered, I wonder why I got the name King. He got it from his dad. I guess his dad was just as cocky as him. He had 9 seasons, I guess, with the Senators. And they won the cup, but he was a dandy and everything. And I remember reading about Conn Smythe. He really wanted him, eh? And Conn Smythe didn't have the money. He just built the gardens and everything. And he had a horse, I think his name, a Royal Rare Jewel. And he made $35,000. Imagine $35,000 on a bet like that. And he bought King Clancy from the Senators. I think he paid 15 grand to get him back. He was a beauty. He looked like a little leprechaun. I remember one time seeing it in TV later on that they brought him out on St. Patrick's Day. He was always a big guy on St. Patrick's Day. He was sure funny. I tell you what, he was one of those guys you just asked a question in the grapevine and away he went. Don't think he was just a guy that hung around and I make him sound like like he didn't do much. And I remember this when Punch was exhaustion. He was like, he said he was exhausted. He went in the hospital and he filled in and they were having a tough time at the time. And he only lost one game out of 10, I think it was. So he was a good coach. Well, he brought in a different, Punch was a pretty tough guy, boy. The way Punch coached back in those days. I remember one time Punch, I have to tell stories about Punch, but I just think, it just hit me now. We were in Cleveland one time and I was playing on defense with a guy named Bob Armstrong, and he was mad at me for some reason. And he used to sit up in the back and he says, "Bob Armstrong, and think of a Bob." And I wouldn't go on till he went my name, and he benched me the whole game. Anyhow, he filled in for Punch, and he did a great job, and they won the cup that year. And a few years later, Johnny McClellan was a coach for the Leafs, and I remember he got sick, ulcers or something. Filled in for him again. I mean, he really was, he did everything. There's nothing he didn't do. In fact, in one game, he played every position. And you're going to say, well, how could he play goal? Well, when he first started out, if the goalie got thrown out of the game or he heard he couldn't play, you had to put a player in, and he went in and played goal. I mean, I've been at banquets where he has, and he was absolutely fantastic. When you do a banquet, I always made sure, three guys that I can remember, you never spoke after. Red Story was one. We have to do a story on him someday. King Clancy was the other, and you made sure you never spoke after Dennis Hall, because he was the absolute best. But King Clancy, everybody loved him at the banquets.
You know, the one thing that I found interesting in the interview was that he said he was on the ice with the Eddie Shore Ace Bailey incident, where Eddie Shore hit.
Ace Bailey, he was a great hockey player back in the 30s.
Yeah, and there was a big incident where Eddie Shore hit him, and he fell, and he hit his head, and he almost died. But
last rites, they thought he was dead.
And I read a lot of, you read a lot of things about it, but King Clancy gave first-hand account of what happened. So we're going to hear King Clancy talk about the Eddie Shore Ace Bailey incident.
Played many times and where you were set up, in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
They were a nice, quiet...
Eddie Shore.
Nice, quiet guy.
Yeah. Ace Bailey, you were there when he gave
it
to Ace
Bailey. Yes, I was responsible for that.
Oh, I didn't read that.
Yeah, well, I was responsible.
Well, tell him what happened first.
Well, here, Shore came down. I went down to the Boston Inn with the puck. How I got there, I don't know. But anyway, Shore tripped me. And I came back. He's got the puck. I came back. And here he is coming in our defense. And I said to him, "Come back here again." I said, "I'm waiting for you." He said, "I'll be right back." Mm-hmm. Like it was nothing. Of course, Shore could eat me, but not as long as I had the stick.
The old equalizer.
So anyway, he did come back. And I gave him the knee. He went flying. And Bailey picked up my position on the right side. And he hit Bailey on the forehead, spun him upside down, and Bailey hit his head on the ice. And then Red Horner come off the bench, and they say the game is rough today. Ooh. He took a shot at Shore.
Broke his nose, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. He knocked him right. It flattered him on the plate.
Yeah. And Ace almost, that was almost it for Ace, eh? But
he
made it back.
That was it. Ace Bailey, Don never played again.
Well, I think that I remember reading about it, why Red Horner absolutely went bananas and nailed him as he went up and said something to him, and Eddie Shore smirked. And Boy, I tell you, knocked him cold. I guess they, and it was really something, like King said, two guys on the stretcher being taken off. Now, you know, I have more people come up and ask me about Eddie Shore. They don't really know about Eddie Shore. I think I should, I could go on for the next four shows about Eddie Shore. I was there for 3.5 years, the time being sent out, and I was there at his worst, as they said. He was a Darth Vader. I'll tell you how bad it was in Springfield. If you were a bad guy, if you were in New York and they didn't like you, or the coach didn't like you or something like that, and you were sent, they sent you to Springfield. It was like Devil's Island. I mean, it was terrible there. And he treated everybody mean. He really did, except for a few guys. I'll tell you about them later. But, like, I remember Larry Cahan got sent down. Larry Cahan. He must have thought I was nuts, because I laughed at this guy. I think he was from Toronto, and he ended up in Vancouver. This guy used to make me laugh just looking at him. And he must have thought I was insane, because nobody else laughed at him. I remember a card game. We used to take the back seat out and lift it up and put it in the middle, and we'd play blackjack. Should never allowed it, but we did it anyhow. And I remember he's down a lot of money. And what we did was, how we played blackjack is, you put some in, you took it out, took it in, and the next guy took, you could take it all or take parts of it. And he took it all. I think it was 44 some dollars, left pile in the middle. And he got blackjack. So, I was kind of happy. I like Larry Cahan. And the dealer got blackjack too. Well, when the dealer gets the other, gets blackjack, you lose. You have to match the pot. So he's mad. Like, he is really mad. And this guy, Billy McCreary, used to just watch all the time. So he's got to say something about somebody. And he says, he looked up and he's so mad. He's like, "What are you looking at, pike eyes?" I looked at Billy McCreary. He did have pike eyes. I mean, I could tell you stories about Larry Cahan. One time, they had a stupid rule, general managers and owners were so stupid. You drove halfway, like say you were Springfield and you're going to Rochester, you drive halfway, you get halfway, you'd freeze to death and you go to some motel. You wouldn't get to sleep till 3 o'clock because the beds hadn't been slept in 6 months. And then they get you up at 7, you had a half hour for breakfast. And I remember it was so cold outside, the bus driver used to put in ether. So I never had breakfast. Nobody had breakfast. So I thought I was the first guy on, and the door opened and I came in. And there was Larry Cahan sitting at the back. He had a big Stetson on, and he was playing the cards, ready for the card game. I collapsed from laughing. He must have thought I was crazy. Another time, I'm getting carried away with Larry Cahan, but I have to tell you this story. He went to Glenn Sommer, our coach, and he says, "My mother's very sick in Toronto." He said, we played in Buffalo, and he said, "I'd like to go visit her." Well, we all knew his mother wasn't sick. And so Glenn Sommer, he said, "Well, sure, but don't forget, we're practicing tomorrow morning in Stamford Arena, Stamford, Ontario. I'll be there. I'll visit my mother, So he went out and he had his buddies, and he got just blitzed, eh? And in Stamford Arena, you go down, and we went in the dressing room, and there he was laying there on the bench, and he had a beautiful hat, beautiful nice fedora, gloves and everything, and he's laying there, and he's fast asleep, his buddies must have taken him, and put him, and he is fast asleep. We thought he was dead. He's laying there, he was so white. So he got him dressed. We got him dressed and everything. And we got on the ice, and we're doing the stupid rules that we did. And he come on the ice. He had us in stitches. He kept hollering, "Ole, ole!" He kept through it, and he fell to the ice. And he was so dry. He started to lick the ice. Oh, I could go on about him. I did the whole show about Larry Cahan. Oh, and one more story. So now he kind of liked me, and he must have thought I was crazy. So he was getting married in Toronto, and Rose and I we come up to Toronto. We drove from Kingston, and we drove up, man. And we're sitting there, and I look back, and Larry's coming down the thing, and his legs are monstrous legs, and he must have rented the tux. It looked like he had leotards on. I started to laugh and was rose mad. And the more I tried not to laugh, and here I am, everybody's, you know, and I'm killing myself. Larry Cahan, boy, I could go on and on and on, but I don't want to. I just look at him. Everybody thought I was nuts. But what am I talking about? Oh, Eddie Shore. Oh, we had a lot of fun, I'll tell you, boy. I was a young guy. I was only 22 years old. Boston Bruins were mad at me. They sent me to Floyd Smith and I. He must have done something wrong, too. Sent us to trade us to, Don Simmons, I think. Anyhow, he traded us to Eddie Shore. It's like you couldn't.
You went from Hershey and they traded you to Springfield.
Yeah. And I thought, you know, I did something wrong. I played baseball when I shouldn't play baseball, and I hurt my shoulder. Anyhow, I get there. I was his whipping boy. I was one of those guys that he did not like. I tell you, he liked some guys. He liked Brian Kilray was his favorite. And I remember when Brian first came out, we were sitting in a bar and everything. And he said, I like Eddie Shore. Brian and I became the best of friends after. But he said, I like Eddie Shore. You say one more time you like Eddie Shore, I'm going to knock you right off that stool. His favorite was Brian Kilray. Jerry Eamon was one of his friends. And Kenny Schinkel, we used to call him the Rat. They were his favorites like that. But Brian Kilray was his automatic favorite.
Yeah. Well, we have a clip of Brian. Brian was on the Grapevine Show a few times, and he told us, you can take a listen to it, about how Eddie wanted him to skate and how he made him kind of practice.
Now, you're the only guy ever happy to go to Shore.
Yeah, I chose it.
You chose to go to Shore?
Because I was
chose to go to Devil's Island.
As it turned out that I was in Troy, Ohio. And
what league was that?
International League. And Eddie Shore came down to scout us. And our goaltender got hurt in one of the games. So I put the pads on and finished the game. They only got one goal against me in half a game. And then the next game, I was back as a forward and got a couple of goals. So I guess Eddie saw both and figured, this guy must be nuts. He deserves to be in Springfield. So he came down and he offered me a contract. But what happened was, the guy in Troy, I was the most valuable player, and I was supposed to get a diamond ring for being the most valuable player, as well as one of the lowest paid players. And I always carried that on because I was end up that way with Eddie. But anyway, he didn't give me the ring because I'd won it the year before. And I said, that's fine, then I won't sign with you next year. I took a cut to go to Springfield.
Jeez, what a cut.
I was quite a businessman.
Jeez, yeah. You skated just like he wanted guys to skate.
He wanted you to skate like you were sitting in a chair with your backside behind your skates and this way here, the hands out in front of you. And I was a good disciple because I did skate sort of funny. And he thought it was great.
Oh, you were the favorite son. Tell us a few of his exercises.
Well, he'd get you on the ice, and one that he did with me, I'll never forget the first year I joined the team, and it really left an impression so much that I still remember it. He put a stick down the back of my sweater, so I had to skate that way. He taped my hands and my gloves to my stick with just the width of my body, not quite as wide as it is now. In those days, it was a little thinner body, but your hands were taped to your stick here. And then he put a lace around my knee so I couldn't take a long stride, and he said, skate. Well, as it turned out, I could skate because it
was perfect.
I just used to take those short, choppy strides anyway, and so actually he was mad because I could do it right off the bat, and he started making me do turns. And that's when I was trying to do those fancy turns, I fell. Then I got mad and I threw my stick, but I forgot my gloves were with it.
How about Georgie Woods?
Georgie Woods, a poor guy. Georgie, I don't know how he ended up staying there and taking the abuse that he did. He never played a game, or very seldom played, but he kept a cheery note, and he was always a good team man.
Remember how he kept him from going down?
Yes.
With the rope?
With the rope, yeah.
Yeah, that's tell
nice. When they used to, Eddie devised a way to keep goaltenders standing up. I think it was the old Ox, Bobby Sr., that was the first.
The Ox, Bobby Sr.
They put the rope around the neck and then tied it to the goalpost and said, now go down. Goaltenders are smart. They knew when not to fall.
Remember Pat Egan? You remember the day? Were you there the day I broke my stick over the coach?
I was on the Black Ace scene with you that day, Don. You were my partner. And I remember he gave you a two-handed slash, and you came back, and I said, I'll get him. I said, no, he's a coach. Ace, I don't care. And I don't, Pat Egan was really strong, and he came by, and Don gave him a two and a cross check, broke his stick over his shoulder. That's he never wore pads.
No, he was a tough guy.
And you broke it.
Not that tough, though.
No, I thought you were gone, but that came later.
Yeah, next day I ended up in Three Rivers.
I got a story. It reminds me of Pat Egan, since you brought up Pat Egan. But one year we had played in Buffalo in the middle of winter. And I know an awful lot of you people know this fellow. Floyd Smith was my winger, and he was on the bus. It's a true story. Anyway, one of the players didn't make the bus call. And it's 9 o'clock, we're leaving to go to Hershey. And as it turned out, it was Bill Sweeney, and he had just missed the bus call. And anyway, Pat, well, he sometimes missed him because he was having a late coffee. Anyway, as he turned out, Pat said, okay, I'm going to go get him, and so you guys wait here. So naturally, we're all on the bus waiting to go to Hershey. Well, as it turned out, we all had our coats off ready for the card game because it's going to be an eight-hour trip, of which we were going to receive $1.50 for lunch. Anyway, as he left, Floyd Smith just happened to say, well, I'm going to go get a couple of coffees. There's a little restaurant right around the corner.
No, I'll tell you what it was. Keep your train of thought. I was sitting there. He says, Grapes, I'm going in to get a big Coke. Remember, he used to drink the big Cokes, but go ahead.
Yeah, and anyway, he says, I'm just going to go away, so just watch out for me and don't leave. Anyway, as it turned out, he goes around the corner to this little store. Now, across the street comes Pat, helping Bill Sweeney. He got the bag and everything. It was actually like the movies, because when he went to pack, I guess some of the didn't really close, and he just banged it, and the clothes were hanging out. We thought it was actually comical. So when he got on the bus, Bill was a natural funny guy. Anyway, he comes down the aisle and says, let's get the cards going. So everyone really forgot about Floyd.
Yeah.
And so we just took off. Egan says, let's get this bus rolling. Now, Floyd comes out of the restaurant in the middle of winter with short-sleeve shirts on. This a true short-sleeve show. That's an easy one, but anyway, short sleeves, and he's standing there. I thought it was a coffee, but anyway, whether it was a Coke or not, and he thought it was a joke that the bus was just going to go around the block and come back and pick him up. And he told us later, after a half an hour, he knew it wasn't a joke. He walked over to the Buffalo Arena, and Freddie Hunt was a general manager in those days. He walked over to the arena, asked Freddie would he loan him some money, had to fly down to catch the team in Hershey, but he had to fly to Harrisburg and then taxi over to Hershey. He got there ahead of us all right, but the funniest line is when he went to the airport, now he's all frozen and he's cold and he's everything else and he's mad and now he's broke. And he went to the airline ticket and the girl says, yes, where are you going? Got a ticket? Yeah. She says, do you have any luggage? Floyd says, do you think I'd be walking around in the middle of winter if I had any luggage to check? That was one of the stories about poor Floyd that always felt bad that someone forgot him.
Yeah, and he told me. Pat, remember Pat Egan on the thing? We're going along. All of a sudden, we hit a partridge. Remember that?
Yeah.
Tell that story.
And everybody was fighting for the partridge because they're all going to say, I'll get it cooked. Finally, as a glass flew into the seats, this is a true story. Just smash it. Luckily, it caught the second one, not the one by the driver. Flew right in, cracked the window and everything else. And here's this partridge laying there. Anyway, everybody was saying, oh, we'll have a big feast. We'll have a partridge dinner, whatever. Pat Egan put it in his bag. He took it home and cooked it. He never even passed around anyone. But he took it to a chef, and that's the truth. The chef says, you can't cook that. He says, there's glass all through that partridge. He was going to take that. That's
the way Pat was. No wonder he sent me to Three Rivers. Shore used to love to twist necks. Remember, he thought he was a chiropractor.
Yeah, right? And if you didn't allow him, I'll never forget the one night he called me down, and he said, it was a Friday night. We always played Saturday. And he said, I want to see you. Oh, I said, finally, I'm getting traded. It's a Friday night at 10:30. Like, I'm going to be traded. So I went down to the rink, and the rink is in darkness. And anyway, I found my way, naturally, through those 8 years of being there. I found my way to the dressing room. There's Shore in there. And he says, get on the table. I said, for what? He says, I want to crack your back and your neck. And I said, I'm not letting you crack my back, and there's nothing wrong with me. He said, I noticed the way you were skating today. Get on there. And he said, or go home. And he says, you're not playing tomorrow. And I said, well, I'm not getting on the table. So I went back home. And here Judy was waiting, thinking, should she pack? Because am I traded? No, I just wasn't getting my neck cracked. Went down the next day. And at the time, I was one of our leading scorers of the team, one of them. Bill Sweeney was always there, too. And I wasn't allowed to play that night. The trainer came to me, Wally Barlow. He says, Brian, you're not playing tonight. I said, why? He said, because you wouldn't let Shore crack your neck. Oh, I had to let Shore crack my back and my neck in front of the team so I could play that night.
How about Bob McCord ruined his back?
Bobby walked with an S. Not but he felt good, though, because Eddie told him, you're really healthy now. Walked in an S.
I remember he was twisting like that. He was twisting like that, twisting a guy like that. And Denny Olsen was there. And he's twisting. We're all watching. It's all quiet. And Denny says, do any of those things ever come off in your head?
Did Eddie's hands, he had big, thick fingers, just like that.
Yeah.
And he was grabbing his head, and he was pulling up. And that's what Denny Olsen said. Did one of those ever come off in your hand, Ed? And I'll tell you, Eddie Shore, so serious, so sincere, he just turned around. He was just venom. And he just turned around and he said to Olsen, he said, did you say something? Everyone else broke up. Like, how could you not laugh at that line?
Yeah.
It was a great line.
Yeah.
Except Jacques Caron, he came, I told you this before, Jacques Caron came about 6'1". He left 6'3½". Eddie just had that neck stretch.
You know, Tim, I could tell you a few stories. I could tell you stories how he was really, they call him eccentric because he was rich. He was very rich. He invested in the Ice Follies, and he was really rich. He really was. So you can't. But anyhow, I never liked him, and I still don't like him. I'll tell you a story. We were at a training camp, and there was a guy, a young boy, I'd say he's about 21 years old, came from Springfield, and he was a real fan of Springfield Indians. And I remember one time I was leaving the arena, and after a practice at training camp, and I heard this crying, and the guys had locked him in a stick room. It's like a cage, and I had to go get the trainer, and I kind of felt sorry for him. So I knew he was a great fan of ours, so I'm a great guy, as everybody knows. Well, a lot of people, some people think. Anyhow, I go and get $2 from everybody, and there was about 30 guys there. We got him a beautiful, beautiful jacket, same color. I went downtown, got the same color. I went to the trainer, and I asked the trainer if he had any crests or anything with it. He just happened to have in his box there, he had of tools, and then he had a beautiful chenille crest of the Springfield Indians. I took it to a shoemaker that had, and he sewed it on. So I presented it to them. The kid was crying, and it was beautiful like that. So after dinner, I get the word from Pat Egan, the coach, that Shore wants to see me. So I go into his room. I can remember, it was like it was yesterday. He says, why did you get that jacket for that boy? And I said, I don't know. I just thought it'd be nice. He's a Springfield. You got it because you burnt his other one. I'm looking. I should have said, I've been a nice guy and everything. I said, think what you like. He says, you burnt that boy's. That's the way he was. But we got back at him lots of ways. I mean, there's a way you could get back on him on the ice. And I remember one time, forget the guy's name, was Jack Chipstace. We were doing 2-on-1. And he's screaming at me and everything like that. And then coming down, I see Jack Chipchase backing up. He's a big guy. And he hit Shore. I thought he was dead. His hat flipped in the air and everything like that. Got up. I'll tell you one thing, boy, he was a tough guy. He was as tough as they said. I guess when he played, he used to come out with a cape. He was an MVP. I think he got 4 MVPs. He was a great defenseman. They tell a great story of the time he missed the train. Something happened on the train. He got on the wrong train or something like that. And they played in Montreal. And he hired a chauffeur in a limousine to get to Montreal, to get to the game. He wasn't afraid of anybody. He just did it because that's the kind of guy he was. And the limousine went on. They were driving from Boston to, and the limousine went off the road into the snow. He got the car out sometime, drove all the way, drove the rest of the way, wouldn't pay any attention. I tell you a story about him, too, in the restaurant after. Drove all the way, got there, dead tired, had never had a nap or anything. Won 1-0. He scored the winning goal and got fined $50 for missing the train. I remember him. I remember he never liked me, and I'll tell you about that. I was a whipping boy. I remember one time in training camp, I hadn't even stepped on the ice. I just put my gloves on. Mr. Cherry. That's what he used to call me, Mr. Cherry. He used to say, I'll send you to Madagascar. I remember I never could figure out why he wanted to send me to Madagascar. I looked it up. It was an island way off Africa. I remember him yelling at me, if you can visualize and in reality, your maneuverability is nil. And you don't have to steam those guys off the boards. I mean, it was okay for him. He could go into the boards, take the puck off the guy, and go. He didn't realize, like most superstars, that other guys couldn't do it. I couldn't do it. Nobody else could do it. We thought we'd play a little trick on him all the time. I remember one of the guys at the company, great idea of putting a cherry bomb in his a big, beautiful Cadillac he had, big light blue Cadillac. It was about four blocks long. So we thought it was funny. The guy went in and put it, and I don't know how you hook it up. I didn't know how you did it. So we watched, and he went to start it. And boom, the cherry bomb went off. Boy, did we pay after that. I mean, we paid in every way you could think of. The equipment was lousy. I remember the guys never washed their underwear after. Imagine not washing. The underwear, some of the underwear used to stand up in a corner by itself, and it was just terrible. I used to didn't wear underwear, but I wear a long T-shirt with the sleeves cut off, and I used to wash it all the time. Used to make fun of me, my jock. But the rest of the guys, all across their back, I know it's an awful thing to say, they had boils across their back because they did not wash their underwear. I mean, it doesn't sound much now, but you'd be in the dressing room with 15 guys that didn't wash their underwear, and the trainer would never wash it either. It would actually stand. I know it's hard to believe, but the underwear would actually stand in a corner by itself. It's the funny thing is they still call the players the Black Aces now that don't play. Now, the reason they call them Black Aces is that they always wore black sweaters, and the reason we wore black sweaters, you never had to wash them. You know, I could go on and on and on. I know I get carried away talking about Eddie Shore. I got more stories to tell about him. We'll do that another time. But I remember when they made my life story, they had Stephen McCaddy. Is that his name, Tim?
Yep, Stephen McCaddy.
Stephen McCaddy. And he must have listened to Shore somehow and got his fedora. And when I first saw him, he looked more like Eddie Shore. I couldn't believe. I was scared. Now, don't ask me why you were scared of this little guy. Well, he was 5'10". Why everybody was terrified of him. But I remember Stephen McCaddy, what a great job he did. He acted just like him. I think you said to him, Tim, you said to Stephen McCaddy, you said, can you skate? And he's a Canadian guy, and boy, did he give it to you.
Yeah, he just came and gave me a look, and just, yes, I can skate.
But Tim, as we go, tell a story about the last time anybody in our family had I never forgot this. And I was the lowest of low, and I'll tell you more stories about him. But I never forgot you telling me the story how you and Rose met him at the Boston Gardens.
Yeah, we were at a game, and the game was going on, and I had to go to the washroom, so Mom had to take me. I would have been about 10 or 11 at the time. And we were walking down the halls of the gardens, and it was completely empty because the game was going on. And I saw a gentleman coming, and he had a cane, and he had a fedora on. And Mom saw him, and we kind of slowed down, and he came up, and Mom looked at me and says, do you know who this person is? I've never met him. I said, is it Clarence Campbell? And he laughed. He said, no. And he goes, this is Eddie Shore. And he goes, hello, young man. And he goes, do you play hockey? And I said, yes. And he looked at Mom, and he says, Rose, he says, Don's coaching the Boston Bruins. You must be very proud. And Mom said, yes, I am, Eddie. And he says, good luck. And he walked on.
And you know one thing about that, Tim, you tell me that story, I kind of get choked up hearing about it, that I was the lowest of low on his team. And the one thing about Eddie Shore that I remember you telling me that story, he hadn't seen Rose in about 20 years, and he still remembered her name.